Hey everyone, Vito from More Beer. We're in beautiful downtown Martinez at Del Cielo Brewing. A close friend of mine, Luis, and his wife, Silomar, own this place. They're making amazing beer. So we're gonna go in and talk to them about all the beer, the vibes they've created here. And also we're gonna talk about kettle sours. So if you're interested in kettle sours, check this episode out. It's one for you. All right, Luis, Silomar, thanks for having me. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedules. I love what you guys are doing, so I just want to kind of, you know, share our platform, share what you guys are doing, go over it, and then also get deep into some of the amazing styles that you guys are making, and maybe share some of your tips on how to make those with the homebrewers out there. But let's start with you guys and the vibe here. So, you know, I always refer to you guys like the husband and wife power couple. You know, you're both working here at the business, doing. So tell me a little bit about your backgrounds and your roles in the business. You know, what you came from previously and what you're doing now here in the business. A little bit of everything. But let's start with you, ladies first.
Sure. My background is in art and design. I used to be an art director for a greeting card company for about 12 years or so. Coming into the business, my focus has been in marketing, design for like the concepts of the labels, doing all the event preparation, concepting, bringing different bands, doing different collaborations with nonprofits. So I'm originally born and raised in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
I was there till I graduated high school, came to the US for college, studied graphic design. And I just loved, you know, just the diversity.
Of the Bay Area? Is that how you came to the Bay Area?
Actually, I went to school in Sarasota, Florida.
Florida, okay.
Then I moved to Cleveland, Ohio, which is where we actually met.
Oh my God, I haven't even heard this story, so I'm glad I asked this question.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no, oh, I didn't know you guys met in Cleveland.
Yeah, I was there, my first job out of college. We met one night, danced all night, and that was it. We've been together since then.
I love the dancing because when I think of you guys, I think of dancing, right? So that's cool.
Yeah, like last night we were dancing. Well, this weekend for the reggae festival, we were dancing. It's like, this is how everything started, dancing.
Man, in Cleveland, Ohio. So you were working there?
I was working for a greeting card company there. First job out of college. We met, hang out there for like a year and a half. And we're like, okay, ready to go somewhere else. No more snow. Moved to the Bay Area and
it's like what's a Puerto Rican and a Colombian doing in Cleveland, dude?
Yeah, right. So I know we know each other through Doe's homebrewing roots, and I know you're finance, but tell everybody your kind of story, where you're from, how you got to Cleveland, how you came to the Bay Area.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Cali, Cali, Colombia, and I started. So everything that I've done in my previous career was related to numbers and finance. So I have a bachelor's in economics, I have a master in finance. And then when I decided to move to the US, I came to do an MBA. So a master in business administration. So then I moved in 2006. I kind of started, I was doing like a internship for like a couple months, and then that's where we met in 2007.
We got married, it was like chop chop.
We got married, it's like okay, let's bounce. So we moved to California in end of 2010.
What made you guys? I mean, obviously it sounds like the sun, but what made you guys choose California?
I think personally, I was looking for something that still had that diversity that I was looking for when I moved from Puerto Rico to go to college, but I wanted mountains. I wanted to like feel similar to home, but still have that diversity of culture.
That is the good thing about, especially the Bay Area. We got, you know, 3 hours you're in mountains, you know, you're right at the beach, you've got kind of everything. Yeah. So, and you pay for it, I guess, right?
Yeah. 45 minutes.
It's a little more expensive.
45 minutes, like 1 hour and 45 minutes, you can go to Monterey.
Yeah.
Or you can go to Tahoe in 3 hours. But Cleveland is just flat. Flat, there's nothing.
Well, I'm glad you guys came. And I think the city of Martinez is happy you came as well. So, All right, so the next thing I want to talk about, a lot of home brewers, you know, myself included, at some point dream of going pro, of opening a brewery, right? So I want to talk about like chasing the dream, what that looks like. I remember, you know, we were friends through that. I remember you got the keys to this place, building it out. Talk to me about like going from home brewing to commercial, just that step, and you know, like how, you know, building out, you know, the finance side, you definitely probably had that under wraps. But yeah, like just talk to me a little bit about like any advice you have for homebrewers thinking about going pro, other than don't do it. I've heard that before, but like, you know, like, yeah, what is some good advice for people?
2006, I go to at a bar, Ohio, and asked for a beer. And asked for the beer tender to recommend me something. He gave me a 90 minute from Duckfish. Mm. This is 2006.
Yeah.
And I just came from Colombia drinking commercial beer.
Light lagers and stuff.
Light lagers, everything. Like, just imagine like Bud Light and Coors Light. That's what I used to drink in Colombia. So I look at this glass and I'm like, oh, you know, it like has more like a deeper color, smell. I'm like, what the hell? I take a sip. I'm like, Jesus. I've been wasting 30 years of my life drinking crappy beer. After that, it's like, dude, you should make your own beer. You should brew your own beer. I'm like, no, it's too messy. I don't have the time. I don't want to do it. So then for one of my birthdays, I got a gift certificate from More Beer.
Okay.
From one of his friends.
Yeah, from one. They got together and they just pulled a gift certificate. So I was able to, I think it was like $200. I bought the simplest.
Yeah, that's what I started on too.
And Megan, you remember Megan?
I remember Megan, yeah.
Dude, like, I used to go there, like, Megan's like, hey, Luis, what are you brewing right now? So yeah. we used to talk a lot about beers. She tried, like, all my beers. And then from there, like, I was brewing, like, once a month, then, like, twice a month, then, like, once a week, two times a week, three times a week. So it gets to a point, like.
A lot. I remember that, yeah.
It gets to a point like I'm brewing.
Who's gonna drink all this beer?
I know, so I got more beer that we can drink by ourselves. So we start inviting friends. So I start inviting like all of my closest friends every other Friday. So we'll go to our house every other Friday. We gotta kill these two kegs, bring food. I got food, and it's just like until like 1 or 2 in the morning. And Silama is like. On our bed, he's like, can you guys just...
Let me kill the Wi-Fi. Maybe
kill the Wi-Fi. Kill the Wi-Fi so we can play any music. He was like doing karaoke. So if somebody wants to go pro and open a brewery, you got to do it, you know? If that's something that you want to do and it's part of your dream, you got to do it. You got to be ready to work 14 hours a day for the first year or two. You want to make sure, like, everything is running smooth. Make sure if you're a homebrewer, make sure to be part of a homebrew club and train competition so you get notes on your beers and just bug every single brewery that is around you.
Yeah, one thing I think you did that I learned from, because you went pro before I did, is go and spend time, like spend a week brewing with, you know, this person over there doing that kind of like internship, right? And like learn that process, because production brewing is a lot different than homebrewing, right? Yeah. I mean, same science.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's kind of the same. It's just different equipment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like one of the key things, like, you want to make sure you have people that you can rely on. You know, it's like, I remember when we did our first batch. Our first batch was Coqueta, our blonde. Mm-hmm. So I was just brew the beer and I was ready to dump it. Because that was my first beer that I ever done. I did like a couple of water batches just to make sure like I knew where the flow was going. But then it's like, yeah, I'll do a blonde if something happened.
It's not that no expensive issues. Of a batch. Yeah. You're
there's,
not ton
there's
of
not,
hops.
There's so. Not a lot of hops. There's no dry hopping. And I remember reaching out to a couple. I think I reached out to Matt. And Matt came over here and tasted like, yeah, dude, like just go trash on Kega, man. It tastes good. And it's like, okay, keep going.
Going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think right now we're like we used to use a different system, but now we're using a new system. I think we're like on 1,500 batches.
Oh wow! Okay. And you're almost at 5 years.
Four years. We did.
Yeah, this year.
May this year, we have our anniversary coming up.
One of the other things I think you did very well right from the beginning was like generating a buzz, right? Like of like, I remember you guys would have the parties at your house and have like all the beer on tap. So, you know, like you started to build a community before this place was even existed. And I think you did that really well. I think you did some beer fests before you even had the brewery too, right? Set up a booth and, you know, had that, you know, kind of getting the buzz out there.
Yeah, so we were able to pour homebrew beer at events before. I guess we'll still do it at Spring Brews and we'll still do it on the Bay Area Craft Beer Fest.
To your point, I feel like that's something that Luis is a very, how do you say that? Like,
social?
Friendly, happy? Friendly,
extremely social person.
I'm pretty selective.
He'll talk to anyone, he'll invite anyone. Like, when he was brewing, like, I feel like something that was so awesome about the way you went about it is you would invite anyone that you would meet that week to your house to try the beer, get feedback, invite them again with their wives or whatever it was, meet someone at an airplane, invite them to your house, like not even kidding.
Yeah.
And I think that was so powerful because you got feedback from all kinds of people.
Yeah.
You started to build this amazing community that like got too big for our space and we have to like actually find a space to be like an extension of our home, basically.
Yeah, so one of the things that we wanted to bring to the brewery is, so we consider a brewery is an extension of our house. Yeah. You know, it's like, mi casa es tu casa, you're welcome to my house, you're welcome to the brewery. And we want everyone to feel like you're in our house. So we want to make sure like everybody's welcome. But then at the same time, we want to bring all the culture that we have. Mm-hmm. So mixing from like Puerto Rican, Colombian, and anybody on our staff. Like a lot of our kitchen is from Mexico. We have a lot of the beer tenders. We have, that's something that we always look. We're looking for a mixed culture or everything.
So not specific thing, but like mixed culture.
Diversity.
So one of the things that we wanted to do is start bringing the music from our country. Like we do like salsa, we do Latin jazz, we do cumbia, we do vallenatos. And on that, every event that we try to do is highlight those specific things from our culture. And I think I'm 100% sure that people love that because it just providing like a different view or what else is up there besides the music that you normally listen to.
I would add to that, we love, you know, where we come from and we want to share with the community. A lot of people might be familiar with it or not, and if they're not, it's like a really nice surprise. We love curating a variety of genres, so like, yeah, we'll do the salsa and the cumbia merengue, but then we'll also do rock and ska and jazz. So we like to mix it up, make it, you know, a
Bluegrass.
Unique experience. Yeah. Make it a unique experience on a weekly basis for our guests. And then we'll kind of match that sometimes even with like the food that we have on special, kind of always finding like new ways to surprise and delight our guests. And I don't know, I love it. To me, it's like being here on the weekends, like I'm working sometimes, most of the time, but you know, I'm enjoying the music, seeing people enjoying with their families, friends.
All right, cool. That's amazing. The food's great, but the beer is from heaven, right? That's what Del Cielo means. So let's you got some beers out here for me. Let's go through some of them.
So we probably want to start where the name came from.
Yeah.
You know, so we wanted to have our name in Spanish that represents who we are. And then I have the idea taking part of Cielo Mar's name. So Cielo Mar is together, but then if you remove the M-A-R at the end of her name and then you put D-E-L in front with a space, it means Del Cielo, which is from heaven.
Mm.
So there's nothing religious about it. It's just when we wanted to use our best ingredients, we wanted to outsource or get fruit from our country. And it's basically, you know, when you're having that last piece of brownie with ice cream at a restaurant and somebody asks you, hey, How is that? It's like, dude, it takes like him, can I have a piece? Like, no.
It's mine.
It's mine. This is it. This is the explanation of where Del Cielo comes from. We want everybody to taste the beer and say like, huh. You know, like, I never tried anything like this. And we get that with a lot of our beers, but everything is about like balance the beer. You know, we want everybody to feel that you can just come here and have a beer.
A style for everyone.
Yeah.
Some of the other cool things, you do stuff for the community, right? The local community. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that project. I know you're part of the running community, the biking community, you know, health is important, right? So I love to see that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I started doing before we opened our business is getting to know our community, getting involved with the business, with the local business. We have a bike shop in downtown Martinez that is Pegasus. They do a bike ride every Tuesday and Thursdays, and it's pretty much like bike the bridges. It's 25 miles, but there's beer.
Okay.
In
I
between.
Could do 25 miles if you give me a beer.
There's beer in between, so everything is about like, you know, having that connection with the community and be able to support different things that we love about it. If it's bikes and kids, if it's we have a beer for Cali that is called Rad Rep. And then every time that we do that beer, we donate 20% of the proceeds to
Cali. I know who Cali is, but let everybody know
Cali is. Cali is our 3-year-old crazy people. She's normally around loose when we're close. But when
so that beer is for
shelter.
For the shelters.
Shelter. Okay, okay.
So we rescue Cali and
well, she's a rescue. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's a rescue, and everything that we try to do with that beer is try to change the mentality that people have with pit bulls or big breed that people believe that they're dangerous. But it's not about that. It's about how you train your dog too.
I know. I used to have boxers. I got a Boston now, Boston Littleton. But the boxers, I remember people would be scared of it, you know. And I'm like, dude, she's just gonna lick your face. That's all she wants to do.
Yeah, I love the beer that you did. What was the name of the beer?
Me and my dog. A boy and his dog.
A boy and his dog.
Thank you for remembering that. Yeah. Cheers to that, man. Cheers to our dogs.
Right?
Cheers to our dogs. Yeah.
It was an
IPA.
IPA.
Yeah, like super West Coast. It was 6.4, so it's like, you know, kind of on that border. All right, so another beer I want to point out, and I think it's your best seller, but when I remember when I saw this name, I was like, Orale? But then growing up in San Francisco near the Mission District, I knew Orale a lot, but then it wasn't until you were like, no, that's Orale, but when I see it in that, I'm like, Orale? Yeah, Orale? So tell me about that beer. Yeah, yeah.
So the way to pronounce it is Orale!
Orale, Pato!
Orale! So yeah, so this is probably one of the first beers we can. Actually, the first labels that we did was Coqueta, Orale, Hoptiness, and Orange is Delicious. Mm-hmm. And those beers being our
continue to be our core
beer, our core beers. We probably go through like 45 to 60 barrels. I would say like 30 barrels every week or every couple of weeks of this. But the whole reason we did this is we wanted to have something that represent more the Hispanic culture.
Mm-hmm. Got the luchador on there. Yeah.
And it's like, and it's like perfect because it's obviously it's our top sell beer in volume. And then one of the things that I wanted to do with this is just something closer to like a Mexican lager. You're thinking about like Modelo Especial or something like that. So we brew that beer and people just love it. We have a lot of accounts that's all they take every week. And it's nice to see when you're taking Modelo or Tecate or Dos Equis Tap Handle, just people willing to replace.
Overtaking it with craft beer.
Yeah, taking with that something like a little bit more body, a little bit more flavor. And then we did something different about this, which is Morena Mia, which is It's an international dark lager or a Vienna lager, which is similar to a Negra Modelo.
That's right. That's the Viking Light Munich or Dark Munich you're using in that one? I remember talking about, because I love that beer.
We use a pale malt from Viking. We use a Carafa 1, obviously like flake corn.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a great beer, that dark lager.
And another spin-off is the Cerveza Rica, which is the one that you were looking at the fermenter earlier.
And
it's still that Mexican lager
agave,
style.
Agave, right?
Agave and lime, yeah. It's
a great segue of like the Viking malt. I know that's you use that in a lot of your beers. I believe the Guava Dreams as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, more beer and more beer pro. For those who don't know, More Beer has a pro division, which, you know, we sell pro products. Tell me a little bit about how More Beer helped your journey and how it's helping, you know, your pro journey as well.
So that's something that I always been involved with you guys. Because, like, if you think about it, I came to Doze in 2007. And for the first time, I brought my beers to the beer table. And I remember asking, like, hey, so how do I know if my beer is good or not? It was a session IPA. So we just had a new member that was asking how good is your beer? And he's like, well, he got first place on the beer of the month. So I guess your beer is pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the first batch that I ever done, and I brought to you guys. But then the connection between those More Beer is just like every time that you go to a store as a home brewer, like, hey, I'm trying to brew this, and having people that knows the specific details about the substitution of different grains, the substitution of different hops, whatever you guys didn't have, it just worked really well for me. And the whole reason why I'm still so connected to More Beer and Doze is because without Doze and More Beer, there will not be El Cielo.
Yeah.
Man, that's like, powerful.
It's such a seamless connection too. Yeah. From home brewing to pro.
So, and that's why everybody asks me, oh, one day I want to open my brewery. It's like, you gotta brew a shit ton of beer. You gotta be connected to home brewers. You gotta ask people to taste your beer. Doesn't matter if they tell, like, they hate your beer.
Similar to like what you guys built, the community, right? That's what sticks out for me, is like the home brewing community and the craft beer community are very intertwined, at least here in the Bay Area and probably across the United States. And it's just that thriving community. And it's not just More Beer, right? It's any homebrew store, that homebrew club, that craft beer community. They're all, you know, I can only speak to the Bay Area here, but I bet you in Cleveland, in Michigan, in all these other places, there's a small community of people that just freaking love beer, right? And they're helping each other out. And that's one thing that attracted me to this community, is the sharing. You don't see that anywhere else, where it's like, hey, dude, I'll give you my recipe. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you had asked me about how to make a certain beer style. And it was like, oh, I know these guys make a killer one. And I hit them up and they're like, yeah, dude, give Luis my number. Like, we're sharing amongst ourselves, right? And it's beautiful.
And I get emails at least like two or three times a month. It's like, hey, I try your beer. I've been drinking your beer
like
for
home
so
brewer,
long.
Yeah,
a home
yeah.
brewer, like, any... Is there any chance that I can get the recipe for the beer? Like, two.
Yeah.
Here's the recipe. Make sure to bring me some bottles so I can taste them.
So we talk about it.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think you only really see that in the beer community.
Yeah.
So,
and it's like reaching out to like friends, you know, like obviously, you know, a lot of the people that I know too. But
hops, man. Like,
hops.
Sharing
the hops, sharing the yeast. It's like, hey, I forgot to order this bag or something. Do you have it? Can I go and pick it up? Or I forgot to order hot for this beer. Like, everybody's open to help you on ingredients. Or
you saved
like,
my ass many times. Yeah.
And it's like, especially like, I get a lot of questions about fruits.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, so we're getting this fruit. How much are you using? It's like, so I'm like, I'm an open book. Like, somebody wants to brew Wild Dream. Somebody wants to brew Mental Haze. I'll give you the recipe. Go and do it.
that's a perfect segue. Let's jump into Guava Dreams, this gold medal winning kettle sour. I think you probably make the best kettle sours in the Bay Area, in my personal opinion. Let's talk about this beer specifically, and let's give homebrewers some tips on how to make an amazing kettle sour. We all knew it was amazing. Everybody loves it in the Bay Area, but then you win a gold medal at GABF. Tell me how that experience went, felt. It was during COVID, right? So maybe we weren't there.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it was during COVID.
Tell me how that went down.
So I remember that day, like, I think I was doing like a double batch or something. Obviously, like, we were during COVID, trying to keep up with our beer, canning pretty much everything. And then I started like getting texts from you guys, like, you, Justin, Sager, Craig from Shadow Puppet, from Morgan Territory, like, congrats. I'm like, then I look at my friends, like, what are you talking about? He was like, dude, are you watching JBF? And I'm like, no, I'm brewing. So I was doing a double batch by myself that day, and then I literally just went into the computer, brought my computer to the brew deck and see what was going on. So then I saw like, oh, Wild Dreams got gold. And then I'm still brewing. And then Yerba Buena got silver the same day.
Same year, yeah.
So Yerba Buena got silver the same year.
Same category too?
No, so this is American fruit, and the other one's urban spice.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, man. Which I love that Yerba Buena, man.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's like that mojito vibe, like you were saying. Yeah, it's a great beer. So talk to me. Start to finish about kettle sours and cultures and all that kind of fun stuff.
Cool. Yeah, so funny story about this beer is that this was I never done a kettle sour home brewing. And the first time that I did it, I got together with two or three people from those. Like, why don't we just brew a kettle sour? I'm like, yeah, let's do it, man. It's like, and the cool thing is that we've been using the same lacto culture for almost like 4 years. Is that it? I think it provides more backbones to the beer, and it's keep going. Like I just brewed Guava Dreams on Saturday, and we just boil it today.
So talk, for the homebrewers watching, talk through that process, kind of the front end, day one of a kettle sour.
Okay. So what I love about kettle sours is that you can have like a half of day brewing, because normal mash, sparging, then transfer to the kettle, and then I'll bring the wort to 195. Basically, that's like safe place, safe temperature,
pasteurize the
wort, and then we drop it to 113.
So you can run it through your HeatX.
Run it through a heat exchanger. Once it goes, when we stop the whirlpool, it goes up to like 118, 120. That's kind of what I like to keep our kettle sours in between 118, 120. Then you start dropping the pH.
So you're gonna pre-acidify it?
Yeah.
With some lactic acid?
Lactic acid, and we normally use some acidulated malt during the mashing too.
So you're already kind of having a lower pH.
A little bit
pH
lower too. We literally just, once you drop the temperature, what I do is I try to drop it to 4.4, 4.5, and then once we get that, then we introduce the culture, the lacto culture, into the wort. Obviously, like all that you're doing, like you have to have like separate keg coppers. You want to have like separate CO2 line for that. Even that we boil all the bugs, you want to make sure that nothing you get into the rest of your tanks, nothing you get into the rest of your equipment.
Lactobacillus, you don't want that getting everywhere. Yeah.
So then from there, once we add the lactoculture, it's normally 24 to 36 hours to reach the pH that we want. For guava drinks, we do 3.3
is what you shoot for, okay.
3.3 is what we shoot for. And the way we do our kettle sour is like, you gotta think about it, like, what kind of fruit are you adding? Is it like a sweet fruit or is it like a astringent or tart fruit? So some, when we do yerba buena, because we add the mint and because we add the lime, we do 3-6.
Because you know it's going to be...
That's the mojito style.
You're adding sour to it. You don't want sour on top of sour. You want, sweet, sour balance.
And I think that's why people love a lot of the keto sours that we do is because they're balanced. You know, like you're not getting that stomach pain after having like 2 or 3 sours. And I see like people drinking wild drinks for like 2 or 3 pints.
So, I'm just... For everybody out there, like when you're done with the kettle sour, you've hit the pH you want, you're gonna pull some of that wort and put it back into a keg, right? And that's what you've shared with me, we share around. And I think what was interesting to me, you said, you know, 24 to 48 hours, depending on when Luis or myself or Craig grabbed that sour wort, man, it turns it quick, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if you did one last week and you passed it to me, I'm going to get there quick. If it sat around for 2-3 weeks, it might take 48 hours to hit that, right? Is that what you see?
Yeah, so ideally, we don't let the culture sit more than a month.
Yeah.
Which we normally don't do, but...
Someone's
brewing something just to keep it going. But the longer you let it sit on the kegs, the longer it's going to take you to...
Hit that
to get
pH.
The pH, yeah.
Okay, so we've kettle soured, it's hit our pH. Now what happens? We pull our lactic culture to pass off to our friends, right?
Yep.
And then it's just a standard brew day past that point?
Yeah, pretty much like we just, so the way we design the brewery, we have a point that we can send everything back into the kettle or we can send it through the chiller. So then normally you just get to here and check the pH. Okay, we are 3-3. You get here and start turning the burner. And then you go to a normal boil. Obviously, you gotta pull the culture before you boil it.
Yeah, or else you'll kill that culture. Yeah.
Once it goes above 128 or 130 Fahrenheit, it's dead.
Denatures kills that.
The only issue doing kettle sours is that you're gonna tie up your kettle for 24, 36 hours. And that's what we normally do it on. I normally do it on the weekends because it's ready for Monday. If we have the chance to do it on a weekday, we'll do it. But most of the time we can't afford to have the kettle sitting there for more than 24 hours.
So standard brew day past that, then you're into the fermenter. And that's where let's talk fruit, right? We're talking guava here. How many pounds per barrel or pounds per gallon are you talking? Are you adding it pre-fermentation or post-fermentation too?
So what I normally do is once we hit like around like 3 Plato, 3 Plato, 3.5, then we add the guava. I'm not looking for the fruit to ferment too much because the Brix on the guava is lower compared to other fruits. So you gotta think about that. What are the Brix on the fruit that you're bringing? If it's high, you wanna let it ferment a little bit so you don't get issues like the beer like starting to ferment during the canning or during the keg.
Do you do anything to cold crash the yeast out, kind of sulfate or anything like that?
So we normally, I like our sours to be dry. I don't want like super sweet sours, or we don't use lacto in our sours. Everything that we do is backbone by the fruit. And in this case, like I pick guava because guava is huge in Colombia. And I grew up in Colombia getting on top of a tree, grabbing guavas and eating guavas at my grandma's farm. So for me, it's like just bring me back to when I was like 5 or 6 years old and my mom was yelling at me, like, hey, get down from that tree, you're gonna break something. And I just have like a bunch of guavas on my t-shirt. And I'm like, I'm just eating the guavas.
That's
so
awesome.
That brings me like a lot of joy too.
So to the ratio, is it about a pound per gallon? So like
so we do, I don't know what's the ratio, but we do a 22 barrel batch and we use 400 and...
So 31 gallons to a barrel, multiply that by 22 just for everybody out there.
Yeah, so we do 440 pounds. We get like 10 cases.
Okay,
10,
so a little under cases, a pound per gallon.
10 cases yeah. of per barrel, yeah.
Okay. Awesome, man, it tastes
which
great.
Which just provides the right mixture.
Yeah, it's not overly sweet, but yeah. The fruit's there.
I know it's like, it's a little bit hazy, but because we use the same string that we use for our hazy beers. Mm.
So, oh, you use the hazy string. Yeah, which so we used to use Vermont. Do you
we use juice.
Juice now, okay, yeah. cool.
So we use juice for our Keto Sours.
Kind of accentuate that ester, yeah.
Let me get it just, fruity. It just helps holding the fruit flavors and everything that is floating so it doesn't clear out. Whenever we want to do like, for example, we dip blue piragua and we want it to be like clear, then we use cal ale. Mm. Or we use a juice, but we biofine it.
Gotcha, okay. Yeah.
So there's multiple ways that you can go around sours, which is the same as doing our beers too.
Last question on this, because I think it's part of the, or helps with the style. Do you carbonate these a little bit more than you would say a hazy IPA?
Yeah, so we normally go a little bit higher on this. It's like a 4.5, 4.6, mm. like 4.55, 4.6, just to have like that sparkly taste. You know?
Yeah, it really helps the flavor for sure. Our last question, not related to Guava Dreams, but a fruit that you turned me on to, talking about South American fruits.
if you can pronounce it.
I can say soursop. I know how to say soursop, but... Guanamana?
Guanamana.
Guanamana.
So good.
So good, man. You turn like it's like banana and lime, right? Like yeah, is the flavors that I get
it's,
from it.
It's unique. Yeah. Like the first time that Cielo Mara went to Colombia, once we were together, like dude, like we went to a market and she tried like 20 different fruits that she
had.
Yeah,
I've never
before.
Even yeah, seen
so
it.
There's no soursop in Puerto Rico.
There is, actually. Okay. There okay. is. But there's so many other fruits in Colombia that I've never even seen in my life.
Interesting. That's yeah, so that was awesome. Man. You turned me onto that, and it was delicious.
Yeah. So we have a distributor that brings fruit from Colombia, and I would say like 90% of the fruits that we use is for them.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You turned me onto those same people.
Guanabana.
Yeah. And that distributor. Yeah. Which I appreciate. yeah. Well, thank you guys for sharing your time, your space, your beer with me. It's been great. Cheers. We did it.